you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What's up, guys? Ryan Griffiths here, producer of the Rory and Carson podcast. It goes without saying, it has been a trying time here in the United States and around the globe these last few weeks, with the deaths of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor sparking protests and calls to action across the globe. With that said, we here at the pod support the movement of thousands fighting for equality and justice. We stand in solidarity with previous guests like Stephen Curry, who have been marching and using their platforms for change. In this episode, we welcome three-time NBA champ and New York Times bestselling author Andre Iguodala to the show for a great conversation. We felt it was important to tell you that this interview with Andre was recorded prior to the deaths of Floyd and Taylor. We want to be completely transparent with our audience, so no questions about us skirting the current issues that are much bigger than sports will come about. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Speeding all around. 3, 2, 1.
It's Rory McIlroy's podcast. We don't care anything about you and your MTV VJ days.
Incomparable Carson Daly.
I'm going to go a little deep here.
He likes it. He's going to love it.
They listed you at 5'10", which I thought was funny.
That's generous.
Champion golfer of the year.
All right. I like the sound of that.
Rory McIlroy.
I said, well, he's going to have to go through me first.
Why do people have a problem with that? That's what we want to see. Rory, on the podcast, Andre Iguodala. How about this? We're in quarantine and we get the best guest we've had yet.
I know. It's awesome. And thanks, Dre, for joining us.
Thanks, Dre. How are you, man?
Yeah, thanks for making me feel welcome. I don't know if I would believe you as best guest ever.
No, we've had the podcast for like a while now, and we've always sort of joked between our two connections. We've had like zero guests. We've had a couple, but and they're good friends of ours. So we're both really excited to get you on the show. Let me just start with the obvious. These are some pretty crazy times for us. I don't know, what have the last few months been like for you personally?
Well, I try to look at things on the bright side. You know, I try to just take the approach of, what can you gain from this? And you really get a chance to just sit back and think more than you've been able to in the past. You know, we've been doing a lot in terms of trying to make the most of ourselves and make the most of our opportunities so we won't just sit down. So, you know, I got like seven things going on. I've actually been more busy than ever, but I've had time to like just sit down and like get through a book in a week. I've always wanted to get through a book in a couple of days or through a week. And then I'm reading like multiple books at the same time. Then I'm getting like to sit down and actually cook for the family, feeding the 2-year-old. You know, my son and I have been watching the Last Dance and Breaking It Down. You know, he's the basketball player. So like things that I've normally wouldn't be able to get to or I'd be rushing through, I can actually like take time to like actually enjoy it. 2-year-old is actually playing golf. Like she's going to be a beast and she swings hard. You know, she practices every day, like 7 days a week. So I've actually been, you know, it's been hard for a lot of people, especially losing their job. And I want to keep that in mind. But for me, I've tried to take the good out of it. So I've actually, you know, been enjoying it.
Your career speaks for itself. Everybody knows who's watching this or listening to this, how the success that you've had on the basketball court, and certainly a lot of people may know about how much you've done off the court, which is one of the reasons Rory and I both respect you so much. I look forward to getting into some of that conversation too. But how'd you get into golf?
Golf? I mean, obviously growing up and then seeing Tiger and, you know, that familiarity and that connection with him being African-American and, you know, it's kind of like, you know, he didn't break the barriers, but he kind of like just in terms of just taking the sport over and dominating and just that appeal he had, I watched as a kid. And it's funny, Kevin Gamble had like a few, he's a basketball player from my town. It's only like two or three guys that played in the NBA from my town or professional sports at all. And he had a golf event for kids and he gave us like some free sets of clubs. And I went 1 year And then the clubs were like, they didn't fit after like 2 weeks. I was just grew too fast. So, and then I didn't even know where to take the clubs. Like, didn't have access to a course or anything like that. So I've always enjoyed just sports in general. And then when Tiger came along, obviously, you know, started liking golf. But I got the bug when one of my assistant coaches taught me how to hit a draw. Cause I used to go to like the range or the putt-putt golf. Don't tell my wife, but I would go on a date and like putt-putt golf. Like that was a spot to go to.
Of course, so, that was the spot for sure.
Right. So, I mean, and then they had a range. So I would hit balls and obviously, what was I doing? I was just hooked. I was slicing them right. You didn't know what the hell was going on. But then when I got to the Golden State Warriors actually in 2013 and one of the coaches, Pete Myers, I told him I was going to take golf serious. I really wanted to get into it. I turned about 30, 31 around that time. And he told me I hit a draw, and I heard the sound, and you just saw the flight of the ball. Like, I got hooked, like, buying every piece of equipment. Like
literally hooked.
Yes.
Yeah, hooked.
Yes. I mean, like, I was buying golf apparatus, all types. I knew the loss of every club that every maker made. Like, you know, I'm watching. Now I'm diving into Rory, and, you know, he just signed with Nike around the time. So, like, I'm getting the whole the outfits right, the specs, matching my looks up. Like, I'm knowing what he's wearing on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
There it is.
I just really got locked in.
Rory, does that bother you a little bit? Who is it? I think it's JT that puts out on, like, Instagram. He lays out his outfits for the night before. Isn't that a little too much?
Well, I think so. I think a lot of the big guys, for the majors, we all get scripted. So we know what we're wearing, like, months in advance, right?
So for the
big events, for the majors, obviously there's a lot more hype, and you know, it's a chance for them to sell more product.
Wait, you know the shoes, the pants, the golf shirt, the hat, the over for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, months in advance?
Yep.
Do you know that, Trey?
Yes, that's how I know. Like, I know, you know, you follow Nike golf, or you can follow, like, Golf Poser has everybody's looks. Like on Instagram,
you're really into it.
What are you doing on Instagram? And I'm like, here, you can look at my Instagram. It's all golf swings. It's all golf looks. Like, I ain't have nothing to worry about. So yeah, I'm locked in.
How good of a golfer are you, and how much do you play? Not obviously right now, I guess.
Right now, I'm not playing at all. I got a net, just put together myself. It was like $90, but it works. I got a putting green in the backyard. I can chip and putt.
There you go.
I'm actually moving in a couple months, and I got the simulator built. So this is like I didn't, my wife doesn't even know how much it costs. Like, I'm high.
Don't tell her. Don't tell her.
This is like, this is it. Like, I'm never moving ever again. Like, this is the spot. So, I got my goal in like 2014. I was just thinking about this last night. My goal in 2014, cause I was with Steph, and I was like, if I ever got to a 7 handicap, my life is set. Like, I'd be happy for the rest of my life. Last summer I got to a 7-1.
Wow.
So, like, yeah, I'm, like, grinding. But now I'm back to, like, a 10-11 because...
Wait, so you break 80 regularly, or is that kind of... For me, the measuring stick's always just, if I show up somewhere and I break 80, I feel good about my round. That's the only measurement for me, and I'm a 10.
Yeah, so if I break 80, like, that's a hell of that's a great day. Like, I come home happy.
Yeah, me too.
The freshest new voice in comedy...
All right, all right, all right. You're through the golf pass.
Actually has many voices.
Well.
The Connor Moore Show. Watch now on Golf Pass.
Dre, let me just go switch gears for a quick second, because I'm such a big fan of yours, both on and off the court. And I got to say, man, I have so much respect for you on so many levels. You know, going to Golden State, the whole idea of the mentality of the sixth man, you're an all-star, and they say, Steve tells you, you got to come off the bench. You come off the bench, the defense on Braun, MVP finals, like the whole mentality, the way that you approach the game, and then the way that you have this sixth sense of opening up your brain to other athletes. You know, it's so selfless, your ability to learn about the future and after the game. I know you're excited about life after the NBA. You're a young guy, but not just for yourself, but for your contemporaries and for the other guys. What drives you, or what has driven you to get the business acumen that you have now that you want to share with everybody? It's so rare.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think it's just, you know, I've been just trying to take in as much information as possible and take as much knowledge in as possible. And I think as you get older, you mature, and you start seeing how, you know, the people that you're with the most can have a direct effect on that. So, you know, I just gotten close with a lot of smart people. My business partner, I met him when I was around 23, 24. And he just, you know, he held me accountable for like a lot of things that were going on. Like, what information are you intaking? You know, how's your Twitter feed set up? Are you just taking in good information or is it nonsense? And what books are you reading? So, and then my wife is like one of the smartest people I know. I've been knowing her since like middle school, and she can read like a book in a day. So like, yeah, we have this friendly competition in the house. It's like, who can read a book the fastest? Like, I can't keep up. But it's just like, you know, you just surround yourself with people like that, and they just motivate you every day. So what I came to realize was that it's more than just taking in the knowledge. It's what you do with it. And I always wanted to, there's power in having that knowledge, and people want to get access to it because they know you have it. And it's only right that you give it back. I think, I forgot what book it is, but it's one of my favorite quotes. It's like, once you master something, it's your duty to give it back. And once I was like, whoa, that's like my mind exploded. Like it went off. Like, oh, it's like, you know, you become like a jujitsu master or a taekwondo master. And like, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
And it was like, once you master something, like, it is your duty. Like, you must give it back in some capacity. Like, I don't have to be a basketball coach, or I don't have to work for an NBA team, but in some capacity, I have to, you know, pass that on to make sure the next generation is in a better place.
I love
Rory,
that.
Yeah, you guys have so much in common in like what I know about you, Rory, and like the way that you handle your business, and with Sean, and your team is tight, and you guys are smart minds. And I mean, this whole Golf Pass deal that you guys have, you're smart enough to understand that the great Arnold Palmer, who brought the Golf Channel to light, this is a channel for golfers, and you're now the face of that, and you have this great business relationship. It's so much more. And then just since I've known you, Rory, I mean, just in the last year and a half, your whole thing seems to be, golf's not going to define who I am as a man on planet Earth. And the closer you come to that realization, probably the better golf you play. And you read a lot of books. What motivates you to understand sort of the business side of your sport?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's probably, you know, as a golfer and the fact that our careers go on for so long, I don't think it's something that people really think about. I mean, you know, a basketball player, a football player, you know, their careers are, you know, 5, 10, 15 years at the max, where golfer's career can be 25, 30 years. And you're never thinking that far ahead. But I think, as Andre said, if you start spending time with smart people and you try to learn a little bit from them, and he was talking about reading books, I always feel like people that read books are always encouraged by someone to get into reading. I was encouraged by someone to get into reading, and from there I got the bug, and I started to read a lot of self-help stuff, which I really got into. But then you start to venture out into other things, and you know, the business world, and obviously that's something, Dre spending so much time in San Francisco and getting to know some of these guys in the tech space and getting interested in that, and really, you know, embracing it and embracing that side of things, and having one eye on the future, and that's exciting too. I mean, I think the person, obviously, Carson, you mentioned Arnold Palmer. He was the first one to do that back in the day. But you look at someone like a Greg Norman as well. Greg's done very well in the business world and always had one eye on the future. And you know, golf's not going to be, it's not going to be around forever. I'm only going to be able to win majors until I'm in my mid-40s, but I've still got the second half of my life to live, and what am I going to do with that? So you still need to look ahead and look to the future.
When you guys were both, Andre, you spent 2 years at Arizona, and then Rory, you didn't even go to college, but that little kind of like, you know, because you didn't maybe spend 4 years like a traditional student, did that make you guys more, I guess, naturally inquisitive to kind of learn because you weren't in that school environment as most, you know, as long as most people are?
I think for me, I didn't learn anything like necessary for life in college. You know, it was more so, you know,
I'll drink to that.
Like it was the end of being a kid. Like, okay, right before you have to really grow up and, you know, pre-adult, you know, you get to experience that being a college student was cool, but being a basketball player in college, especially in the States, is different. It's like, you're like a professional athlete. And I went to the University of Arizona, and it's like a million population in that area. And it was all about the basketball team. So it wasn't even really about, like, you know, I made the all academic team. Like, no one knows that. Like, no one cares about that. Like,
right.
Are you carrying on tradition? But once it kind of helped me. Like, once I, it prepared me to be a professional athlete. It didn't really prepare me to be a smarter person. But like Rory was saying, you got to surround yourself with just smart people. And then that's what takes you into like reading things outside of what you normally would.
Dre, what's the biggest change you've seen in the NBA from when you started to now?
Oh, guys are a lot smarter. Guys, I shouldn't say smarter. Guys are a lot more in tune to the business and the things around the game. You know, early in my career, it was, you know, you went through like the bling era of basketball because that's the first time guys start making that much money. Yep. And it was kind of like, you know, showing it off a little bit. But now it's more, what can you do with that money to make it last four generations? I think you're seeing that across all sports. You know, you look at every sport, you look at one athlete in those sports that have had big contracts and to turn that into, you know, like big corporations. You know, A-Rod is doing some big things in baseball. He's trying to buy a team now. Like Michael Jordan, you know, he was the first one to kind of take it off. And we're following kind of like his blueprint, his footsteps, and he had a team too. You know, you're starting to see people that with ownership now. And I don't think that was ever thought of previous generations.
You know, it's funny that makes me think of when I really started, just in my own way, thinking about those thoughts. It was right around when Jay-Z put out that song 30 something. You know that song? Something to effect. He's like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like, I'm not going to buy the bright watch. I'm going to buy the right watch. You know what I mean? Like that whole mentality at that time to a younger generation, especially African Americans, who for a long time had been taken advantage of in the NBA and other places.
And you know, it's funny, like the show just came out some months ago or around this, I forgot when it came out, but Black AF, it's Kenya Barris, who did Blackest, who did Mixedest. He has all the issues.
Yeah.
but this show is like, it breaks down like that first generation of wealth in the African American community and all the issues we go through. Like, I want to make sure that I'm attached to where I come from so then they don't say I'm not one of them, but also I don't want to, you know, alienate myself to say I want to be a part of this new group I'm a part of. And it's like you're in this box and you don't know which way to move. And it's like how you navigate through that space, you know, living where you live, but your family still lives where you came from, which is in poverty. And, you know, I wrote a book last year, The Sixth Man, and we went like, that was a deep dive. It wasn't about basketball. It was just how, you know, the African-American navigates through these new spaces of, you know, this large acclimation of, you know, of money and how we deal with it.
Yeah. Are you VP of the league's PA?
Yes. Yeah. I just got a call earlier today with the PA. Yeah.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
The player president. Yes. And I've been a part of it for the last like 7 years, I want to say.
Uh-huh.
And it's a tough job. You don't get paid for it and you spend hours, but you learn so much about the business. And it's, once you start doing it, you're like, yo, I learned so much through this. It's like, it's not even about, you know, me.
Getting paid.
Yeah. It's about giving back to the other guys. And you realize like when the rules come in effect, like, we did something where the retired players got health care for like the rest of their life, right? And we thought it was like, oh yeah, let's do that, like it's like, you know, like that's what you're supposed to do. I had so many retired players coming up to me like, I really appreciate what you did. And I was like, oh, that's when it hit me, like, whoa, like it's bigger than what I thought.
Yes
I thought it was just the right thing to do. I didn't realize it had that big of effect. But then you start looking at other things different when you know when you do your business off the court. You know, you realize how all your decisions and the things you influence can have a huge impact.
Producer Ryan insisted that we use Skype, and I'd said that you're on the board of Zoom, which everybody's been using with their children. I'm on Zoom calls every day with I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old. And so Zoom is like now the biggest thing in the world. So like Web 2.0, whenever that sort of era was 10 years ago, Ashton Kutcher's a buddy of mine. You know, he's now basically a VC he's got his fingers all in everything. And yep. I used to, every time I see him, I'm like, all right, what's, you know, give me the hot, like, you know, IPO tip. And he's like, ride sharing. It's going to go now. That's so stupid. What human being's going to get into a car with, you know, with someone they don't know? That's the dumbest thing. And of course, you know, he's a billionaire off it. How do you, or what is your sort of sourcing for how you nav some of the tech early stage projects you've had a chance to be involved with? Is it just sort of like things that you use?
Well, it's like a team effort, you know. I can't take all the credit, but you learn trends, you know. It's just like a lot of people, what you see in a lot of these companies, they're like the same person might build like five companies. You know, they have a playbook. Like Elon Musk had like two or three exits before he started Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, he was at PayPal, and the PayPal group just spread all over the place. Like you see the PayPal guys, it's like four or five of them, and they all started like crazy companies. Yelp is one of the companies that came from the PayPal crew. Like they're all over the place.
Yeah.
So you start seeing like certain engineers, and it's like you get a network of people who are great at certain things. And it's all like this. It's funny because it's like a billionaire boys club. And being out here in Silicon Valley, you find a way to get your foot in the door, and you just try to take advantage of a lot of those opportunities. But you know, you're looking for certain things. Like it's like four or five things to look for. Like somebody starting a company and they bring it to me, it's like, okay, how big is the space? You know, what's the market size? Like that's foremost. Is it even worth it to go?
I gotta write this down. Hold on. This is good stuff. How big is the market size? Okay.
Yeah. Going to the market size.
And then is it true the company has to be even a small level? What is the deal if they're profitable versus not being profitable? Because we hear with a lot of the storage space companies, however that works, not storage, but like cloud, that no one's making any money.
Well, like cloud spaces, no one's making outside of AWS or, you know, Microsoft Azure. It's a few places that are in the cloud space. But actually, Amazon, that's what keeps Prime going. That's what keeps the 1 to 2 day shipping going. That's how Amazon actually works. They're making most of their money off AWS and advertising. But if they're making money or not, it doesn't really matter because, I mean, Uber's still not profitable. And then they IPO, they're still worth, I don't know, 60, 70 billion. I don't know what their market cap is now. But, you know, you got companies worth billions that haven't made a dime. I think it's all in terms of, you know, how the data. Data is king now. Like, how much data can you collect and whose data can you get? Facebook is making too much money because they have too much data. And they have a lot of issues with the FTC. In terms of are they a monopoly? So
for me,
I invest in, you know, I'm starting to want to or taking on investing more early. So the earlier you invest, the more risk you're taking on. So I've been with Comcast Ventures for a couple of months. It's an actual job I have where I'm a venture partner in what's called the Catalyst Fund. The Catalyst Fund is for underrepresented communities, underfunded communities, I should say, because most of the companies that are backed are, you know, white males, and you see a lot of boards, white males. Studies show if you have a female on your board, your company is more likely to be profitable or to have better numbers or have a higher market cap. Like those are facts. So with the Catalyst Fund, which is under the Comcast Ventures, we invest in women founders, African-American founders, and Latinx founders. And that's been an incredible ride. But at the same time, I'll still take deals that might go through the Comcast Venture umbrella. So we look at so many different things, and we want to invest as early as possible. When you invest earlier, you can have influence, more influence on the company. And Comcast, NBC, Universal umbrella, there's so many add-ons and things that we can bring to the companies in terms of helping them grow. We have something called Forecast Labs where you pay for marketing at cost, which saves tons of money. And, you know, TV ads are the biggest media spend, one of the biggest media spends in the world. So, you know, our companies in a portfolio get more views and more eyes on them than other people would mostly be able to.
Dude, this is like business school 101, Rory. It's like it's crazy, right? This is real talk. Like this is how this man's brain works. And I'm so inspired by it. I think it's just absolutely incredible.
I've got a couple of good books for you just talking about the diversity on boards and stuff. I read a couple of good books recently, which I think you'd really like.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
I'll send them your way.
But Dre, like video sharing now is everything in the wake of the pandemic. It held us. It was connectivity for so many of us on so many different levels, education, work, and personal and otherwise. But like, how did, you know, so is that an example of you getting in sort of early on something? Like, what did you see in Zoom?
So I got in Zoom later than I would have liked to, and then I didn't invest as much as I would have liked to. That's normally the case. Like these companies, there's so much money out there, especially in the time pre-COVID where it was too much money out there in the venture space. Like it was easy for, you know, companies to get funded. Now it's kind of reversed where, you know, companies are just struggling to get by. So terms are more favorable for the venture side. But with Zoom, I just saw, you know what, you should write this note down. Like, you're investing more in the person than you are in the company.
Yeah.
Because there's some great minds out there that have had some great companies, but you know, they're not good people to work with or deal with. And it usually doesn't work out. Just karmic effects come in the way. And, you know, whether people believe in it or not, that, you know, you learn that in sports. You know, seeing the people who work the hardest, you know, they get the breaks the most and work the right way. But I think it's just with Zoom, the founder was just he had an incredible story. He was very humble. Like, he's a billionaire now. And he still works like the same hours. Like, he has no hobbies. Like, his hobby is he enjoys working and making sure customers at Zoom are very happy. His name's Eric. His son can play basketball, actually. But I just had a great conversation with him. It's very rare that you can start a company that already has multiple entrants in the space. And you talk about the video conferencing space. You got Skype. You got, you know, Instagram Live, Facebook, which is Instagram. There's so many video communication spaces.
Yeah.
Microsoft has their business communication space, and he just saw some flaws in there, and he's like, this space isn't where it should be, and he just tackled it, and look where we're at.
I love that. I love that whole idea. And Rory, you probably feel the same way as it equates to just people that you have around in your life, and you're really sort of, you know, like, I've gone through every agency in Hollywood, like literally every agency, and now my agent is, you know, is somebody that's been in my life for a long time, and you really, like, I trust. I don't, you know, anybody can make the phone call now. It's the person that represents you. Have to trust that person.
It's all about relationships. If you can build good relationships, and that's what I've learned. It's, you know, you can go through life and go through business and have these superficial sort of acquaintances, and they're never really going to amount to anything. But if you build really strong relationships with people and people that you really trust, it can bring you such a long way. And I think one of the things I was going to say about Zoom compared to like all these other platforms, it's just got such a catchy name. Mm-hmm. Like Zoom, like, it's so easy to say, let's just get on Zoom. So it's amazing what a name can do as well.
Right. It's like Kleenex, you know, if it's like becomes the act itself and it's the product name, you own the space now. Like, it's good.
Exactly.
Rory McIlroy knows what it takes to become world number one. Now it's your chance to ask Rory about your game.
Golf Pass members sent in some questions about every shot from the tee all the way up to the green.
How much do you vary between using your...
What's the least amount of risk?
The greenside bunker shot causes me to seek a pint.
Does he want suggestions on the drink? I have two options. I can go around.
McIlroy answers your golf questions on Ask Rory. Only on...
Rory, have you been watching the Jordan documentary?
I have, yeah.
Okay, let me kick it to Rory, and then I want to get your thoughts. And these are just my own. I watched one and two. And I was amazed during the promotion of it that Michael said he didn't ask for any edits, right? He didn't ask for anything to be edited out. And he was quoted as saying something to the effect of, I actually think people are going to think I'm kind of an asshole after they watch this. You know, they're going to see the real me, or however he worded it. I was like, that's crazy. That's insane. But good for him, letting us really take that ride in that 97 season. When it comes to Scottie Pippen, I don't understand, speaking of business deals, I never knew this. I didn't know he had that deal. I didn't know that Jordan was making 36 one year, and Scottie took a deal for, I think it was 7 years, $18 million, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Now, like, I was so angry with the Chicago Bulls organization for the way that they treated Scottie Pippen after watching that documentary and knowing his stats and how important he was to the legacy of even Jordan, that watching Jordan's attitude when he said stuff like, nah, man, I don't think Scottie was thinking about me and not the team, I started to look at Jordan like, oh, no, man, that's not cool. That's not the right. Don't think like that. That Scottie's your boy. Like, did anybody else have that thought? Did you?
I mean, it's a hard one because I think Scottie said, and it's something like he had to take the deal. You know, he said he had to look after his mom and dad and his family back home and stuff. And it's a horrible position to be in. Like, he should have had way more leverage than he did.
Jerry should have, they cut up deals all the time. They should have thrown away the deal in success after five championships. They should have written him a new deal. The owners make new deals when it's good for them. But when it comes to the player, like, all of a sudden, I got to live out this contract. Like, that's probably why he decided to, you know, I think he like stayed injured or whatever. Or he demanded a trade ultimately. Dre, kick some knowledge on this fact. Like, I thought Jordan was wrong in that Pippen situation.
So it's very complex. what you will learn, and not too many people have said it to date, but like Magic Johnson actually had the worst contract in NBA history.
What? So
Magic Johnson had a contract that was 25 years, $25 million.
What?
Yeah, right. So here's the thing is that this was like the pre, you know, like David Stern was building this empire, and basketball revenues weren't crazy around like 93, 94. Then they just skyrocketed around like 96, like basketball revenue, like double. So contract sizes are going to go up as well. But if you're already locked into a deal that was pre, you know, all this influx of money coming in, you just had to ride it out. And that's what happened with Scotty. Scotty signed a deal around 92, 93. And at the time when Scotty signed a deal, that deal was like top four, top three in the entire league when he signed it originally. So mm-hmm. he was compensated fairly when it was signed. It was just too long in terms of like inflation, in terms of the way the money went up. It was bad timing and it was too long. But as he said it, you know, Rory stated it, he just had to take care of his family. So he would rather take the long-term deal. You know, most people would say, okay, you're gonna give me all this money, you know, and right now, but in hindsight, in 7 years, you're like, dang, I signed a bad deal. But when you signed it, it was one of the best deals that were around. So there's never been a restructuring of a contract that a team has done, actually, NBA. I think a player may have taken less to make the team better, which I strongly disagree with, because like you said, we're always trying to make the team better, but the owners are never trying to put themselves in the position where they're doing something right by the player. But what happened was, you know, you start seeing a lot of the veteran players like Carmelo, he got caught up in the same situation where they start seeing a lot of guys get paid and they were like, wait, how is these guys making this much money? And I'm only making this money. And it was, no, you just signed your deal for a long time, long term. And we didn't expect the money to go up the way it did. So when you signed it, you were actually compensated properly. It's just, you got to ride this thing out. So what's happening, guys were signing extensions to add on to their contracts, making the contracts longer, but once the contract eventually went in, it would be below market value still.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So Michael Jordan did it right, and I read his agent, David Falk, at the time. He has a book called The Ball Truth, which breaks the entire thing down.
Yeah.
So Patrick Ewing had a deal where, I don't think it's ever been a deal like this. Patrick Ewing had a deal with the Knicks where he would be paid the average of the top three centers in the league. That determined his yearly salary. So every year they would just look at, okay, who are the top three paid?
Okay.
So average it out. So anytime like Alonzo Mourning, like $100 million deal, and that was like one of the first $100 million deals. And that helped Patrick Ewing
because he benefited from that.
Yeah. He benefited, and his salary would always be above or right at market value. So it would never be like this. It would never be outdated. So it was just different times. It was unprecedented times in terms of new money coming in. How do agents maneuver new contracts? What's coming up? Like, do you sign longer term? Do you sign shorter term? Do you put in more risk because you could get hurt and miss out on some money? You know, like, I know a guy in the NBA now who he had like a $70 million extension, and he bet on himself to say, I can get more. He's only been getting minimum contracts since then. So he left 70 on the table 3-4 years ago, and he's only gotten like, I would guess, $10 million. So
at the start, Dre, when you said about, you know, basketball players being more in tune, like the fact that the biggest players like LeBron or whatever are saying, okay, no, I'm just going to sign a 1 year deal before the new TV contracts roll in, so then I know I'm going to get more money, all that stuff. Is that what you're talking about with players being more in tune with the business side of things?
Exactly. So when LeBron and I think Chris Bosh might have done it too. So LeBron was like the first one to do it, and he signed a shorter term deal, which was kind of the first time someone did that. And people were like, why did he do that? And then when it comes around new TV money, they were like, oh, that was genius. LeBron's been probably one of the best athletes in terms of having the right people around him and the right business minds around him that can kind of see into the future of how things are going to pan out, different scenarios, and how they can benefit most from it, which he should, which is like the smartest thing you can do.
I always just look at his money is money. Then, like in the documentary, Chicago's in success, right? Like this is like Will Smith being the biggest movie in the world, right? And so he gets a back end percentage of sales. And so the more in success he shares in some of that money. Like in my mind, as just a novice sports fan, going back to the 90s, let's say players started really to blow up and get paid in 96. He cut the deal in 92. And there was a plate tectonic shift economically in the NBA. And he just was on the wrong side of that. That's, you know, c'est la vie, right? But because of what he was bringing to that organization, in my mind, you know, the owner of the Bulls calls Scottie in and goes, listen, man, I know you're on the wrong side of this economic cliff. Here's a check for $35 million, or like Jordan, like the way that linemen buy the quarterback, or the quarterback buys the linemen like new cars, like right. There's got to be some sort of equaling out. I felt so bad for Scottie Pippen. The guy's not broke. He's doing just fine. But that was really an eye-opening part of the documentary for me, and I would not want to be the the business affairs guy in Memphis or in Golden State or whoever has to deal your deal, because you walk in there like, oh, where's your people? You got your agent? You got your – nope, just me. What up?
I think he should get his own MSNBC show.
CNBC.
I've actually had that happen before where I've been maneuvering around in the city in San Fran when I've been doing my work, and people are like, you by yourself? I'm like, Yeah, I'm by myself. It's just me.
Yeah, one person. Yeah.
So that's pretty funny. But, you know, on the Scottie thing, man, I grew up in Illinois. So, and then they call me like little Scottie Pippen growing up because we were very similar. So, you know, just been following him for so long. The good thing is he actually got taken care of. He signed like a huge contract with the Portland Trailblazers. Was it Houston? It was Houston, I think. Okay. One of those teams he got paid by. I think he ended up his lifetime salary, just basketball only, I think it might be more than Michael Jordan's. You got to look that up.
Oh, good. Okay, that makes me feel better. Yeah, that just saved the whole thing. Thank God.
Yeah, saved the whole thing. Right? I saw that too, and I was like, Scottie actually makes more than
MJ. Hey, Rorts, I got a question for you, and then we can kick it over to Carson. We'll close this out and let Andre get out of here. But you grew up in Northern Ireland, and obviously Andre's 36, Carson's 46, I'm 45, I'm 38. But like, when that was happening, right, you were 6 and 7 years old. How much of an impact did that dynasty have overseas? Like, how much were you aware that Michael Jordan was the greatest basketball player on the planet? Like, how much did it impact in Northern Ireland?
It did. I mean, you even saw it in the first episode of the documentary when the Bulls went to Paris. Like, the Chicago Bulls were this huge thing, and Michael Jordan was, I mean, I don't think people can sort of overestimate how big he was. And I mean, he was the most famous person on the planet, maybe in the 90s. And and obviously Northern Ireland isn't a big basketball place at all, but you still saw the highlights every Sunday night on Channel 4 back home. And it was all about Michael Jordan. So, I mean, even back then, and not being knowledgeable about basketball at all, you still knew who Michael Jordan was, and you knew what he was about.
Yeah, for sure. I'm so glad that in my lifetime I've been able to be a part of Michael Jordan, and you mentioned Tiger Woods, obviously, and so it's like just eras, LeBron right now, and all the just the greats. Serena. It's pretty awesome. Listen, Dre, I'm gonna let you go, man. I know you got family and all that kind of stuff to get to, but I'll end with maybe can I get a shot aside? So I'll play. I'll be a 10, and I'm a pretty good 10, and like you're about an 8, let's say.
No,
so
I was a 7 at my best. I'm like a 10, 11 now.
Oh.
Yes.
Are you putting the scores in?
Oh, okay. So I'm one of those people where I'm the opposite of a sandbagger. So I hate putting in my high scores.
Yeah.
I got friends that do that. They only put in. Their high scores. And I'm like, bro, I just played with you. You just shot a 74. Like, how are you a 6-7, bro? Like,
because they don't put like, that in. Yeah.
My dad hates that. My dad is the same. He plays at Seminole here in Florida, and he sees guys do that all the time, and it like drives him nuts.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll play straight up. I'll take one shot on the number one handicap hole, and that's
when
it.
When we play, I'll know where I'm at. Like, I can tell you that day, like, when I'm going to shoot, I'm like, I'm going to shoot like an 8.
Yeah, but I'm not, I don't care. So what? Like, I'm going to take you at, like, you know, how you, when you wake up, how you feel. That's not fair.
Where's this going to be? Is it going to be at Riviera, or is it going to be at Cal Club? Or maybe do like a home and away?
Home and away. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Well, we'll figure out a little business meeting up in like, you know, up in Atherton, and we'll do like a meeting and a round, and then we'll go down to LA and we'll do a Google visit in Riviera. Dre, thanks for your time, man. You are the man. God bless you and your family. Stay safe, and best luck next year to you. Thanks. Yeah, come back and see us.
I really appreciate it.
I got a question for Roy. We met last year at the in the finals in Toronto before. Was it RBC?
Yeah. And yep. Then, you guys won that game.
Yeah, we won that game. And then 2016 or 17, Harden Park, the match play you won.
Yeah. Yep. And Bellerive.
Bellerive, I was there for that one. I was following you, Tiger, and JT.
Yeah,
but my question is, I don't know if I want to bring it up, but is there any tee box or is there any time you're playing where you think like, because I have like two holes in my home course where I'm like, yo, I hate this tee box. Like, yeah. I'm going to hit it left.
Yeah, I've a lot, and it's funny. So I always tell the story. So East Lake, the Tour Championship golf course, it was the old 16th, now the 7th hole.
Mm-hmm.
That was always a tee shot that I struggled with. And I played with Tiger in the final round there in 18 when he won and sort of made that big comeback win. And that was the hole that really derailed me. I blocked it way right with my driver. I made double bogey. I was sort of out of the tournament at that point. So fast forward a year, I'm in the final group with Brooks Koepka. And I'm like one behind, similar sort of thing. But I had the honor on the tee box. And same thing. I was like, and I played smart. I remember because going up the 6th hole, I was thinking about the tee shot already. Like I wasn't even thinking about what I needed to do on that green. I was like, shit, I've got this tee shot coming up.
What is it about the shot that you don't like? Just the setup?
Yeah, the tee box sort of aims you down the right. You feel like you have to aim left. You're aiming across yourself. It's just, it's awkward. But I took a 3-wood and I said to myself, you know what? Stand up, make a really good committed swing. Like if anything, if you are on a tee box where you're uncomfortable, hit it harder. Fully commit. Like don't hold back. Don't try to guide it down there. And I took less club. I took 3-wood. But fully committed swing down the middle. I ended up making birdie. Brooks ended up hitting it left, making 6. It was like a 3-shot swing. I ended up taking the lead and then winning. So I always think back to that when I always have a tee shot that I'm uncomfortable on. Like just take a club that you know you're just going to fully commit on and make a good swing, and usually things will work out well.
Gotcha. Okay, the Masters in November, you're always like, you're in your groove. You dominate in the fall and winter months. So I'm calling it today. All right.
There you go. I appreciate it.
I like it. I like that too.
You close it out.
It's a different drive down Magnolia Lane for you in November. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, it'll be all right. Just get the seat warmers on. Have my sweater on, but it'll be good. I'm actually really excited for it. It'll be different. You know, it's something I might not experience ever again. So may as well embrace it.
What are the greens like quickly in Augusta in November?
They'll be able to do anything with them. They've got sub-air. They can, the moisture, they can do anything. They'll be as good as they are in April.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That's a tiebreaker. If we tie on our home at home, we can tiebreaker in Augusta.
If that happens and I have the green jacket, I can obviously invite people to come, then...
Oh God! Please win it, Roars. Please, if not for you, do it for me and Dre. Like,
exactly.
Come on.
Hey, you always got to find a purpose other than yourself.
Yes.
There we go.
Yo, Dre, we got to go follow him, man. If he's there on Sunday in the heat, Saturday night, I'm gonna pick you up. We're gonna go get him.
We gonna be there, ready to go.
All right, we'll let you go, Andre. Thanks again, man. We appreciate you very much.
Thank you, guys. Y'all take care.
All right, thanks, be safe, man. Thank you so much.